Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
Here's Johnny. Edition of Soma Time. I'm Dr. Mark, your culture vulture. The number to call to contribute, to opine, to somewhat make this show entertaining is 646-478-4847. And tonight, Sapiens, as I take a sip of my wine, we are tackling a big bear. Climate Gate. But first, there's been so many of these scandals this week that I had to make a list. I deal with the damn list. There it is. Come here. I mean, going back just a scant 2 weeks ago, right, Sarah Palin was the prominent news story. Now, she's been, you know, between the clouds, a couple of things, you know, popped into the news right after Thanksgiving about her book tour, but for the most part, the Sarah Foo storm has gone out to sea. I'm sure it'll be back, but for the most part, it's gone out to sea. What replaced it? Well, we had the White House crashes. That was in the news again today with all their scamming and emails and all that stuff. I love the way we've become a nation of basically, it's almost like, you know, when I was a young Catholic boy, we were always reading someone else's mail, you know, a letter from Paul to the Corinthians. Well, how did we get this guy's letter? Well, now we're basically just, everyone presents a bunch of emails, and it's a gotcha game, right? So the White House crashes thing, will we prosecute them? How did they get through? Turns out they went to another party. Who did they know? A-ba-ba-boo, a-ba-ba-ba, and it goes on and on and on. But that was nothing. That was nothing, nothing, nothing. A couple days after Thanksgiving, guy goes nutso out west, kills a bunch of cops, and Mr. Huckabee, presidential wannabe, is implicated. And he has to do the I'm really sorry dance, right? Now, we're not even a month removed from, you know, that guy going bazooey down in Texas, shooting a bunch of guys up at the Army base. So, you know, you think maybe we get a couple of days off from this, right? Nope, 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 nope. First, we get the news that the country of Dubai, playground for adults, is going to go belly up, going to not make it to tax breaks. Now, you think that that's sort of an innocuous little footnote in the big spectrum of things as it relates to the economy and things like that, because Dubai is one of those, you know, jewels of the Midwest, or Midwest, Middle East. Look at me talking Midwest. Got the John Cougar in the brain. But politically, it becomes a little bit more important when you consider what happened to Mr. Tiger Woods. Yes, Tiger. That's the big one. That's the big scandal du jour. It's even more important than what Obama had to say last night because of this Dubai thing. Why, you say? Why, Flippy? Why? And why is Flippy talking about this anyway? Well, because it's going to get to my point on Climategate in a minute. tiger is sort of the hood ornament on the big pink Cadillac that is Dubai Land, right? And if that country is a little hurting right now, and their superstar is, running around with the scratches on his face, and he's got bimbos coming out of every part of the country saying, yep, I slept with him, right here, gotcha. That could be a little bit injurious to the future of the Dubai Land and the Dubai country around it, which could then cascade into other things. So the scandal is churning, baby. We got the thing heating up. We're in the first part of December. We just lit the tree a couple minutes ago. It's all good, right? No, not all good. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, as we speak, as I flip the channel, the New Jersey Nets trail by 22 points to the Dallas Mavericks in their pursuit of 0-18 perfection. Rest. Infamy is theirs. Oh, look at this turnover. Oh, my God, are they terrible. Alley-oop, and it's in, and it ba-dum, ba-ding. It is 90-66 Mavericks with just under 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. We're going to try and check in, summercast the last minute of that as the Nets go for 0-18. Another little side scandal that propped up. So, again, my point in all these things, laying them out here for you, folks, is that all of this, all that I just mentioned, and we just mentioned, what, half a dozen of these little newsy stories that come up that are just, you know, fodder for the masses. TMZ has become like, you know, the Geraldo Rivera of the 21st century. You know, they know everything. Smoking guns, got police reports out. Impressive Al was nice to send me that. Maybe we'll read that on the air later. There's so much going on here. That would preoccupy the consciousness of the average knuckle-dragging sape out there that you know, frankly, gets a little bit of a rise out of this when a guy falls from grace like Tiger, or when a guy like Huckabee, you know, has his hand in the cookie jar, you know, with this commuted sentence, and this guy gets out. He took the mea culpa for it, but there's dead cops, and when you got dead cops, you got Republicans are going nuts on them, and that's what you got. And it's all tragic. It's all tragic. But there's a bigger fish on the dock, and nobody sees it. Nobody sees it. Nobody sees it. Why? Why? Well, we're going to hopefully decide a little bit more about that tonight with our guests, a potpourri of guests tonight, actually, on the program, to discuss something that really has been swept under the damn rug. Now, we've mentioned for months now, as we've gotten off on a rant on this swine flu thing, and we'll have a little swine flu report here in a second. But first, a word from, let's see. Yeah, I think Fred's hungry.
Don't overcook it. You overcook it's no good.
What are you doing? You're overcooking it. Bring it over.
What's
it? It's like a piece of charcoal. Bring it over here.
There you go. The Milano's around. Anyway, just loop it. I'm losing it. We'll use a little De Niro to get ready for the holidays here. It's got a new movie coming out. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Okay. This scandal, this swine flu thing, has been exposed. It's basically, it's on the autopsy slab, and we're now picking through the remains of it, right? Just as we're about to go, fooled us again, here comes this pneumonic plague. I said plague. People are dropping dead in the Ukraine. Dead, dead, dead. And nobody knows. Nobody's reporting it. Nobody's saying why. Nobody's saying if it's something we should be concerned about, even. And why would they be so reticent? Well, you know, we had a little speech last night by the president talking about going back into Afghanistan and getting all nutty because, you know, we still have our little General Patton here. Let's see if he's in here. I'm looking for you. There he is, yeah. So this is the theme that he was really trying to get across last night, but didn't come out of the exo's mouth as eloquently as George C. Scott playing General Patton did many moons ago. So.
Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
There you go. So if we have that as our ethos, as our you know, as our pride, as being Americans, and then you see what's going on over there, and the absolute just whoring out of I don't even know how many different companies are thriving off this thing. But basically, what you got there is an old-fashioned turkey shoot. And maybe we'll get into a little more later, but our government and other governments are not what they seem and appear to be, because this thing that I'm talking about, this frickin' climate gate, is a monster. It is going to turn... Remember, I don't know how long ago it was now, but remember when the Catholic Church had to go basically away for a while in exile because they kept exposing all these priests that were doing all kinds of nasties, and it was like this could be the end of the Catholic Church as we know it, you know, because there was so many priests that were implicated in all the sodomy cases. And still, you know, you'll see it from time to time. But this is the last bastion of truth. Science! And it's over. Over. It's over. Because, again, the email hounds have come in and really, they've wrecked it. And now we have seen that a lot of the stuff that we've been reading and hearing about in terms of the man-made global warming is not really what it seems to be. And Batman...
You filthy criminals.
We're starting to line them up. We're starting to line them up, folks. So, I, you know, I've been spelunking the web, looking around for stuff, and you're trying to understand this, because, you know, I'm just, you got to realize, I'm just a hairball here on the second floor in a side street in Larchmont, USA. So what the heck do I care about ClimateGate? Well, because it relates to policies that are coming over the horizon that may affect your ability to think and act as a free person in this world. All right? Now, we've talked a lot about the imposition, let's begin with the H1N1, when they tried unsuccessfully to stuff that vaccine down our throats or off our kids' noses, and everyone went, feh, we don't want this, we're not afraid of the big bad flu. Actually, it's time for that. Let me get over there. It's time for the flu update. Dun, dun, dun. Here it is.
Son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was
going to
say, son of a bitch, didn't you?
That's right. Well, if you're not Tiger Woods' wife, and you're not, the news isn't good for the H1N1 crowd, especially the scaremongers out there. There's just so much going on. But basically, Canadian officials on Wednesday, being today, about 6 hours ago, said that the full outbreak might have reached its peak. Okay? Now, CDC estimates 22 million Americans have been ill with the H1N1. People with diabetes, asthma, account for a high percentage of hospitalizations. Center for Disease Cheerleading, write that down, boys, has updated its estimates with the spread of the novel influenza. This is nothing. I'm telling you, when we get into this stuff, this is nothing. The agency, I love when they say that, estimates that from April to mid-October, there were 22 million H1N1 illnesses in these USA states, with 98,000 hospitalizations and a scant, I hate to say that, 3,900 deaths. 3,900. They forecast 90,000. All right? Good old Ann Shuchat, whatever her name is, over at the CDC. Reporting to you, people with diabetes represent a large percentage of H1N1 cases, and there's a whole bunch of stuff on here. You can go read about it, but basically, they're still trying to scare us because they're still bringing these vaccines over the border to stick it in our bodies and see if they can raise that death count up to a healthy 12, 15,000, which is what the average amount that we had with Barbara Fisher, that somewhere between 12 and 36,000 is what they expect for the flu in general. So this thing has not proven to be the end-all be-all. But, again, back to ClimateGate, that ain't nothing yet. Again, we've got dead people in the Ukraine from not H1N1, but Yersinia pestis. Now, I had found a little video that was actually reported back to me by my new pal there in south of the border in Brazil. I could pick his email out of the pile here. Luis Miranda Brenes. I'll probably learn how to pronounce his name in 2 weeks because we're going to have our Christmas show on December 16th. We're having a flu Christmas that night. We'll be going over all our flu mail and hopefully getting you guys ready for a healthy holiday here on summertime. But Louis posted an article on an obscure Associated Content website talking about this plague that no one seems to want to talk about in the mainstream press. This plague! Can you imagine the plague out there? And anyway, I had posted a link to him that talked about one of the biochemists. Let me see if I can pull that up here. I'm doing all kinds of technical work tonight, folks. I am just a whiz. The computer is a little moody, if you can bear with me here. Let's see if I can get that going. As we, look at that. Staring at a blank screen. All right, let's try that again. You see, I don't have a lot of free time, so this is when I tend to do all my work live on the air. It makes it better for you guys. But anyway, they interviewed one of these biochemists that worked in Russia when they were developing, during the Cold War, these bioweapons and stashing them in these labs like Baxter in the Ukraine. In the Ukraine. Ukraine is weak. Is it a great... Yeah, okay, well, that whole thing. Well, this thing's playing out, folks. So this little video that's on YouTube, it's the title is Ukraine Pneumonic Plague Biological Weapons Must Watch. Okay? And basically, about a third of the way through the video, the dude...
engineered an ancient disease into a killer that could be quickly spread.
That sounds like O'Reilly. Anyway, this thing dances around.
For a human being are written in code, 3 billion letters long.
Lack security at Soviet biowarfare labs are cause for new concern about a deadly pathogen genetically engineered by those same labs. We reported recently on the decoding of the plague genome, recalling the dreaded Black Death of the Middle Ages.
This all sounds really good.
But it's another form of
until you dig a little bit.
Now
get into what
today. Pneumonic plague,
Louis found
far
for
more
it,
contagious and deadly strain, even in its natural state. Computer, can you fill us in?
Sherlock,
get a little view here.
Take
a listen.
Are caused by the same bacteria, Yersinia pestis. They just have a different delivery system. Bubonic plague typically is carried by rats and spread by fleas, transferred only when the fleas, which bite the rats, then bite people. The bacteria multiply rapidly and move to the lymph nodes, causing painful swelling called buboes, hence the term bubonic. The disease
of the buboes
causes hemorrhaging, which creates dark splotches under the skin, the Black Death.
Pneumonic plague, on the other hand, mimics pneumonia, lodging in the respiratory system.
And they get into
some
fun stuff about the pneumonic plague.
It can be spread through a cough or sneeze by an infected person.
Wonderful acting here.
It can be effectively spread as widely as 6 miles and can last up to an hour.
Anyway, he goes on and on, and he goes on and on. And this is in August, before any of this stuff was happening, but they knew about it, right? So you read this thing and you're going, wow, this is like, oh my God, how does this just lay out there and nobody knew about it? Well, basically, you've got a drug company, Pfizer, who sponsors the video. Thank you, Louis. Okay? Now, this is leading towards another angle, towards this climate gate, which is leading towards another thing, which is really scary. Again, forget H1N1. Forget the damn swine flu. It is a hors d'oeuvre compared to what's coming at us, right? So, quoting his email here, back to me, is he sees this video as a clear example of an instrument of mass brainwashing, right? In other words, he says, we are being told that there is a superbug out there. We were told that before, right, with this H1N1, that could be potentially deadly. That's the standard way they do it, whether it's SARS, whether it's, you know, Western Nile, whatever bug in the rug they decide, and the Center for Disease Cheerleading goes, get that damn bug out, and they come up with a vaccine with the WHO, and off they go. back to what Lewis says, we are told the only possible way to combat it would be to trust the pharmaceutical companies and universities or scientists financed by those same companies to create an antidote for the bug they created. It is a classic problem-reaction-solution paradigm. All right, Louis continues, on top of all this, they'll probably want our DNA in order to make, be able to create the antidote, which in my mind, this is Louis talking, is an excuse to get our DNA to make the alleged bug more a spatially deadly, or I guess I mean especially deadly. I'm like reading, like, what the heck is that word? Did you see who the video was sponsored by, he asked me. And I said, no, which one? Pfizer. I mean, are you kidding me? He says. So we're supposed to believe all this, that this dude in the video who developed biological weapons for Russia now intends to find cures for them due to the simple fact that he still works for the same people who developed the weapons. There you go. Now, back to this climate gate. We meander through the forest of just absolute garbage that's out there and try to figure this all out. Because it is nutty, I'm telling you. Nutty. All right, now, giving you like a synopsis on what ClimateGate is, because we're trying to get to the root of the matter here, where the scientists basically have been sold, bought and sold, and we can no longer take anything that they say at face value. All right. ClimateGate began in last month, November 2009, with the hacking of a server. This is all on Wikipedia, where all the truth is. It's just one of a million sources. I'm just giving you an easy one. By this thing called Climatic Research Unit, CRU, of the University of East Anglia, UEA, in Norwich, England, in the United Kingdom. Right? So far, so good. Right? Bunch of guys hacked into this scientific, think tank over there that was researching climatic research. Yeah, we'll just see what they're doing, right? An unknown individual stole and anonymously disseminated over 1,000 emails and other documents. Again, this is the Robin Hood part of the story. The university confirmed that a criminal breach of the security system took place but could not confirm the authenticity of the material at short notice and expressed concern that personal information about individuals might be compromised. Yeah, he's concerned. So was Tiger a couple of days ago. He was outraged. People were lying about him. Now he's doing the, I'm sorry. Details of the incident have been reported to the police who are investigating. Phil Jones, director of CRU, confirmed the leaked emails had provoked heated debate and appeared to be genuine. Climate change skeptics have asserted emails show collusion by climate scientists to withhold scientific information. Other prominent climate scientists, such as Richard Somerville, have called the incident a smear campaign. Never heard that before. Jones called charges that the emails involved in untoward activity ludicrous, and Kevin Trenbreth of the National Center for Atmospheric Research stated that the skeptics have selectively quoted words taken out of context in an attempt to sabotage the Copenhagen Global Summit in December, which is the next step in this garbage parade that we're in. This is the cap-and-trade treaty that Obama's hopping a plane to get on his way to pick up his Nobel Peace Prize. The BBC reported that the university intends to announce an official inquiry into the affair and will make information about the investigation into the hack available in the near future. Now, that's the kind of like abstract version of this, little short little version of this, but we're going to play for you a little different version from our friend, NSM Doc, on YouTube. Okay? Now, his channel is called Sacramaniac SMC. Keep looking to see if he's responded to me. This guy's harder to find than the Pope. But basically, he's spelling it out in a little different language. I'll give you a snippet of what he has to say. He may be joining us live at 10 p.m. to give us some up-to-date stuff, maybe. Or I might be interviewing him on Friday and posting that interview for you guys to hear offline between shows as I continue to dig deeper into this ClimateGate thing, because I'm telling you, once you hear this and you start to understand dead people in Ukraine, first bug didn't work, we're going to soup up the Yersinia pestis, people are dropping dead, we're not saying anything about it, we escalated the war, we've got all these things going on. Now, this conference next week is sort of the one that kind of hits the tripwire and starts making a lot of these dots that were separate all line up at once. Now, take a listen to this and tell me if your hair is not standing up on your freaking neck. Maestro.
But you can click through and read the UNEP document for yourself. It's just that I couldn't get it to print out the section real clear that says it. But anyway, they talk about that this is the new religion, just like I've told you. It's going to be the new world religion. And it reads like this. Environmentalism should be regarded on the same level with religion. Do you get it? They want to make you disagreeing with climate science a hate crime. That's what this will do. Do you get that? They want to give it the status of a religion, which is what it's always been anyway to them. It's always been part of the New Age movement's religion. Their sun, Lucifer, / Gaia, female side of the Baphomet.
Well, woo on a Wednesday.
I've made many videos about that. I'll link a couple in the sidebar for those of you that don't understand what I was just talking about. I have several series on that that brings the New Age movement all the way from ancient Babylon to today, which means there's nothing new about it. It's real old. And so let me read this again to you. Environmentalism should be regarded on the same level with religion as the only compelling value-based narrative available to humanity. Do you get that? They want this to be the only value system and only religion for all of humanity. And how many times have I told you that? That's why it doesn't matter what you say. That's why it doesn't matter what you do. You know, we've made some headway in the Wall Street Journal. There's been two articles in the Wall Street Journal. One by Brett Stevens, Climate Gate, Follow the Money, is a huge article there. But that's the only mainstream news source that's making a big deal out of it, right? And even they go along to say, and I'm going to link a link in the info box because this particular site is actually funded by the UN, and it's Make Copenhagen Too Big to Fail. Do you understand what that means? They want the propaganda to be so big and the push for the money behind it to be so big that no matter how big the outcry is against it, you won't stand up. You won't do anything. And believe me, these emails, they are caught, red-handed, lying, making it all up. And it's a 40% tax on you.
It's this fawning media that glosses over these criminal activities to make it seem as though these guys didn't do anything all that bad, and now they're making amends. But the average person who's lost their job or in jeopardy of losing it, the kids that are graduating college with a futureless future, they can't even get a job at Sports Authority. How about the people that have lost their homes or are losing them and facing foreclosure?
And it takes your firearms from you.
All right, all right. Calm down there, Doc.
Your firearms.
Please stop. That treaty that he's talking about is a serious. It's more of a threat than any of these bugs, man. When this thing comes out, I'm telling you, the wash will be dirty. So, you know, I've given you sort of a overview here. Hopefully we're going to get into this a little more with our guests in a minute. But ClimateGate is sort of, you know, our Paul Revere moment here. Okay? Because this is like taking away a lot of the freedoms that we just take for granted. And it's trickle, 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 and then whoosh, there's the flood, man. So, looks like our guest is here, so we're going to get into that. I'm going to definitely get to a little lesson in soma spotting here as we clean up the last half hour of the show. But for right now, we're going to take a break from my rants and get out the submarine, take out the he's there, Douglas Millott from
yes, sir, I am.
Deep in the heart of Texas. Now, I don't know if you heard any of the show before. Hopefully you didn't, because it was a lot of scary stuff. But
no, I did. Actually, I started listening once you started.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And you still called in, so.
That's right.
Let me give people a little background on you. You sent me over this nice background. I'll read it on the air for you here. Douglas has been, you know, a career scientist, basically. He's served the Navy till 1998, and from, you know, basically graduated high school, I guess, and became an engineer and got into space systems in December of 2007 down there in Houston. He's got a wife, six-year-old kid, and daughter. He's a systems engineer working with the space shuttle program. All right, so when you say, are you a rocket scientist? Yeah, he is.
Yeah, yes, I am.
He's got a blog. It's called thespaceadvocate.blogspot.com, and he's discussing news and stories as they pertain to space, science, and technology. And he's got this new book out called Turning Point, How Space Exploration and Development Will Determine the Rise or Fall of Humanity. You can pick it up on Amazon.com. His quote here is coming to the point of view of a man who desperately wants to see human expansion into space on a more permanent basis. He wants his daughter to grow up in a world where going to space is not reserved for the select few, but an opportunity for many to undertake. So with that as his premise, we'll now go down the road of what happened to the scientific community that you hang out with in the wake of ClimateGate, if anything at all.
I have never regarded a lot of this climate science as science, and I know quite a few people who also don't necessarily find these findings and data to be science. And I think what we're looking at is a select few that have been politically manipulated or are politically motivated to propagate this mantra over and over again in a way to scare the hell out of people into giving up their freedoms and liberties to an invisible foe.
Okay, well then you would you be part of the 31,000 odd people that signed the petition against Al Gore that says that this is all junk and stop using your basically biased and it's some in some sense like the hockey stick thing. If people aren't familiar with the hockey stick thing, it's the whole thing of the carbon stuff. That it's been attached to things like it's going to become part of a tax, and it's really just a political ploy to push through a lot of global legislation to basically make a lot of these things internationally applicable and with no recourse for the individual.
Exactly. And although I didn't personally sign it, I do agree with those that did.
Okay, because I think that list is going to start growing as some of this stuff falls out. Now, for people that didn't get in on the ground floor of ClimateGate, you know, for the most part, what people missed out on was they heard the issue. And again, it's funny. It's like it's more about the guys that hacked into the site and got the emails than what the emails said.
I think that will flesh out in time.
Yeah, and if anyone, you know, some of the names that you'll start hearing floating through the news, Phil Jones, of course, the director, and he's actually been very forthright because I think he knows he's about to go bye-bye. But Michael Mann, this guy is going to become sort of like in the 80s when they were you know, talking about how they were going to cure AIDS. And there was there's a movie called The Band Played On. And again, CDC, same cast of characters back then. You know, here's the super bug that's going to kill us all, same thing. And again, we're going from bioterror to climate control. These things are all over the place right now, but they'll start to make sense and coalesce when you start understanding what the real agenda is here. But anyway, Michael Mann, he's from Penn State University Earth Science Center. He basically is attributing a lot of these quotes that were taken in the emails as being nefarious and taken out of context. All right, now he has to say that. Right. His name's on everything.
Right.
And basically, a lot of the stuff that comes out here in these emails relate to what's going to be happening next week in Copenhagen at this global climate summit. Now, you guys in the space program have a indirect relationship with the Copenhagen summit because of the fact that we're dealing with not just ground-based activities, but also funding for further exploration in space. So if a lot of the money goes toward the greening and all the other things that they're trying to do, doesn't that kind of like, you know, sap your guys' budget a little bit that we're not going to go up if we're going to go into the ground and we're going to be focusing on, you know, renewable energy, things like that? Doesn't the space program have a stake in this?
Well, what it actually does is it ends up taking monies away from human space exploration of space and doing nothing but satellites floating around in GEO and LEO orbits doing Earth monitoring to map and track and collect more data on the science, and so or what they call to be science. Here's my thing about ClimateGate and the entire scenario as it unfolds. I think it's almost impossible to justify that humans are directly responsible for any warming, cooling, or otherwise of the planet, with only 50 to 75 years of real data and really only about 25 years of high-end scientific satellite recording data over the course of the 400,000-plus year recorded history of weather adjustments on this planet. That's like looking at the stock market over the past 100 years, looking at one day, and being able to develop a trend analysis off of that alone. It's asinine to think you can look at something so small timescale-wise and make such a drastic assumption. And that's all they're doing is making this assumption. But the problem is when you're talking about climate, it's really easy to use that as a weapon and say, well, if you don't agree, you don't like the planet. Well, nobody wants to be labeled as somebody who doesn't like the planet, so they begrudgingly agree because the alternative is to be basically labeled a heretic, just in the same way that you were saying that they're trying to use the environmental movement as a religion. That's mm-hmm. exactly what they're trying to do, and that's exactly what they're doing is using fear tactics, the same way religion does, as far as I'm concerned, to push their agenda.
Yeah, and again, this is the irony here, I guess, is that here's one of the things that came out in these emails, and again, this is more than 1,000 emails, 2,000 documents, you know, that's been commentating on these things that they hacked into, and it goes from way back from 1996 all the way to this year. So this is 13 years of stuff as this movement, you know, rose in parallel to the Patriot Act, and remember when, you know, you weren't an American if you opposed this, and all those things that they used to kind of push button, get massive behavioral compliance, and then they scare you. So, mm-hmm. You know, and they definitely tried this year with the H1N1 to scare us, and we didn't take the vaccine. So then you have this plague breaking out over in the Ukraine, and it's not reported anywhere. And it's the scare that's getting scary, how a lot of stuff keeps happening, but in order to get people to pay attention, you almost have to do things like hack into sites and almost kind of like, you know, almost like we're at the point now where it's information control rather than information being freely exchanged. There's a lot of ways that information is tainted. Information is going to be, you know, reframed. And then the first thing they say is, oh, you got me out of context. Well, Michael Mann, in one of these emails that he knows being hacked, or this is a recent email, this is his words. I think we have to stop considering climate research as a legitimate peer-reviewed journal. Perhaps we should encourage our colleagues in the climate research community to no longer submit to or cite papers in this journal. Now, this is the big journal they're going to be waving next week in Copenhagen as saying, look at the evidence we have for these gas emissions and things like that we have to start controlling. So when you mix science with politics to correct or to control economic conditions, are you not operating in an anti-human context at that point? Are you not just basically making everything into all about, you know, like I say, follow the money in there? And science as a whole, individual scientists, they're always looking to get grant money. They're always looking to get the funds to actually do, you know, what we consider to be normal science in the, you know, the pejorative sense. But when you're talking about leading edge science like this, where the information and the evidence has to be, to me, guarded even more. How do you get past something like that? When someone says that's the guy that's involved as much as Michael Mann is, and he's disparaging this journal. To me, that puts their entire platform, you know, on wet sand. I don't know how they go there next week and say, take it out of context, when this guy's email is saying we don't want our guys to cite. It's almost like he saw it coming. He's, again, this is like a Tiger Woods before the mm-hmm. phone call got out. He's trying to distance himself before the fact, and you see that a lot in politics. I don't remember ever seeing it this much in science, but now we're talking about, you know, a lot of expose going on here between. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm definitely here.
I heard it clicking. Between what's going on politically with these guys, what's going on economically in terms of the way it affects, you know, the global conditions of all these different countries involved. But the big thing is, you know, how does this affect the average person who may not have any, you know, interest in this, you know, personally, but it's going to affect the way they live. If these
absolutely is.
Yeah. Now, your premise in your book, which is interesting, is that it isn't so much about saving the planet, you know, in terms of the traditional ways, oh, we're all going to go green and we're going to reverse all these things that are going wrong with the climate and everything else, as if we could. You're saying that the sort of like, almost like Star Trek, you know, the space, the final frontier, is that our next move as a species is to be the UFOs that we've been waiting to come to see us. We're supposed to go extraterrestrial and get the heck out of here because do you attribute it more to overpopulation or do you contribute it more that this is the next best technological leap to invest ourselves in as a species?
It's all the above. It's space. People don't realize how much space can solve. I mean, we've got a good top four or five issues that are on the table right now, and space could answer every single one of them, including environment, energy, employment, the economy, international relations, all of the above. So many of these issues, everybody, politicians specifically, are trying to find one-shot solutions for each individual problem, when it makes much more sense to find one solution that tackles them all. And that's exactly what I talk about in the book, is how space exploration and development, getting humanity off this rock and examining its solar system at first and then beyond after that, is an integral part of our natural desire to explore, which I believe is a fundamental DNA biological element in our existence, whether you want to call that part of our soul, part of our genes, whatever it is, we explore as a species. And so that can't be stopped. And we've gotten to the point where we've pretty much already looked under most every nook and cranny on the planet's surface. There's only one direction left to go, and that's either down to the bottom of the ocean, which the pressures and everything that are there are actually far more dangerous than going into space. It's easier to go into space than it is to go deep down into the abyss, because we just don't have pressure vessels that can survive under those kinds of conditions. So if you're going to look at a way to help humanity as a whole, space is the direction you want to go. Do you want to fix the environment? Use space to do it. You develop space-based solar power so that the power you generate from the sun is not restricted by the atmosphere, night-day cycles, storms, or anything else. Beam that right down to Earth, and you don't create an ounce of pollution, and it's directly converted into usable energy by the people routed to the receiving station. Now, you can do industrial processes off-world. You can't pollute space. Anybody who thinks that they can pollute space needs to tie themselves to the sun in protest, because that's about how stupid it is to think that you could pollute space. So why not put factories that just, you forget about emission controls. You put something on the moon that can make X widget or X plastic or whatever, it can pump whatever it wants into the interstellar wind. It's not going to hurt this planet or the solar system at all. So the moment you start thinking long term in those contexts, the moment you realize it's not that difficult to turn this planet back into the forest Eden it used to be, as long as we use space as the solution.
Now, where do you stand in terms of you know, again, we're talking about 30, 35 years of propaganda, information, whatever you want to call it, where it relates to the damage that's been done, you know, to the atmosphere, and every summer we come out with a bigger sunblock, and, you know, that we've already done enough damage, you know, with our behavior down here, that with all the things that are out there running around the Earth, there's a lot of junk in space, and it's all going to come crashing down. Is there some political resistance, or just this, almost like we believe in the tooth fairy a little bit, that we're just so disinterested, I guess, in the space program in general. Because, you know, you see the Hubble out there, oh, look at the pretty star. But
right.
It doesn't seem to relate to the polar bear. It doesn't seem to relate to the stuff down here on the ground where they can scare us directly. So when you see a movie come out, like a 2012 come out, you know, a 2012 come out, and you read about sunspots, and you read about, you know, all these things that are becoming, you know, meteors are always coming by, and all these things in space, is it that people just have no concept? It's almost like, you know, going back to when everyone was living in the old world and the world was flat. do we just have such a patent ignorance about what space really is, or
yes.
or is it a situation that we just have our money tied to something else?
I think it's exactly the fact that you pointed out, that most people don't realize how important space is to their daily lives. They just don't get it. They use the widgets, they use the gadgets, they enjoy the technology, but they don't have the foggiest clue where it came from. And that's kind of where I'm trying to come into play. I care less about trying to convince politicians that we need to commercialize space and that government space is a waste. Not totally a waste. It has a purpose. But right now, government space is a burden, not a boon, and that we need to shift to a commercial space, private space sector, where private companies are competing against each other to build spaceships and spacecraft and hotels in space and industry on the moon and et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why I think the government is afraid to let go of that is because that's a nice little cash cow for the politicians to shift monies as they see fit and use NASA as a jobs program as opposed to a research and development entity that's supposed to go to the advancements of space exploration. And so the problem is most people, your average citizen, doesn't get what space means to them. And so what I've done in my book and what I'm trying to do by going around and guest speaking and talking at events and to kids and to adults and anybody I can grab an ear is to show them and educate them what space means now and what it can mean in the future if they would just wake up and support, and I don't mean that derogatorily, but if they would just have eyes opened and support politicians or the industry in general to make space the next major economic cornerstone of this nation.
And do you see it going either direction? Is it something where it's got, you know, some support on the Republican side, some support on the Democratic side, or it's just such an innocuous, you know, sort of entity in terms of a political you know, sort of a block of information, that there is no, you know, polarity yet within the political you know, terrain to say these guys are going to block it or these guys are going to be for it. Is it just so sort of cumbersome that nobody has a stance on it definitively, Republican, Democrat?
No, it's kind of funny. I guarantee you, if you ask every single person in Congress what they think about the space program, they're going to say it's the best thing since sliced bread. It's awesome. We need to keep it. It does fantastic science, fantastic this, fantastic that. But then for some reason, NASA never gets the budget it's supposed to. Space industry grants aren't as strong as they should be. They're reluctant to commercialize space like 5 minutes ago. And they're reluctant to pass rules and regulations. They're reluctant to get the commercial satellite industry off of ITAR, the International Trade and Arms Regulations. I mean, there's the private industry right now is completely screwed by ITAR. There are so many things they can't do. And the reason why I don't like ITAR so much is because it completely prevents peaceful international corporate cooperation to build space systems, because we're not allowed to share the specs of a bolt on a communication satellite to a peaceful company that we like in England. Mm-hmm. And so there's really no way to communicate ideas and thoughts over oceans in order to really, really exponentially grow the technological innovation that could be there. We're not harnessing all of the brain matter potential to make it happen. And so all the politicians say they love space, but none of them are doing anything to make it robust. They're trying to just keep the little NASA component happy.
So it's really just lip service, you're telling me, that basically no one wants to talk against it, so they give you the, you know, the bromides and the attaboys, but when it comes time to cut a check, it's going somewhere else. And when you guys cry foul, they'll point out, hey, your budget is this, and we already did. It's almost as if, you know, if you go back a couple of generations when we were racing to the moon, and other things started coming up, you know, Vietnam, things like that, that it became almost diminishing returns, that the country almost kind of got space fatigue in a way, because it's like, it was like, okay, we did that, and it was almost like just for the thrill, like you say, the exploration part of it, the right brain part of space. You're talking about more the left brain part, the practical part, the one that makes long-term sense. And as a country, we become so short-term in the way we think about everything that the benefits of it, we can't see 2 weeks ahead, let alone, you know, two generations ahead of how necessary this is, because if we don't do what you're saying and we continue to beat the planet into submission on all these political agendas that are going on, I just think the Earth, you know, like an old dog, will just shake us off like fleas, because we're going to continue to operate from a model of scarcity and move resources around and play gotcha games with everybody, while you're saying that this, almost like, you know, what the New World was to the Old World, this other vista is sitting there waiting to be shared instead of competed for and co-opted and, as you say, you know, politicized to this point where we can't even have a conversation about it. Do you see it becoming part of the campaign and from the back end of, from, say, next year to the next presidential election, where this is going to become something that people talk about as the fallout from Climategate continues and we start realizing that, okay, you know, we have to shove all these guys to, you know, off the stage, get the old hook out, and we got to re-rack the pins because the green movement and all the things that Obama talked about to get elected was based on a political agenda, not a scientific necessity, and now we got to go back and reassess what the truth is.
Right. I'm trying. That's one of the things I'm really trying to do, is to make space one of the top options that's discussed. When people say, how do we fix the economy, I want people to think space. When people say, how do we generate more jobs, I want them to think space. And not only just think about it in the sci-fi sense, like, ooh, that'd be neat, but understand the practical applications of what space means. Basically, there's nothing that – far too many people think that when you talk space, you've got to be a rocket scientist or an engineer to participate. I completely and wholeheartedly disagree. No, you don't. Space is a business. Space is just a different location, location, location. Uh-huh. You can do all the same things that we do here on Earth, just do them in space. You're going to need space law. You're going to need space real estate. You're going to need stores to shop at. You're going to need to transport items and materials to and from locations. The only difference is it's in space. The concept is not foreign to us, but people try to turn space into something that only a select few are allowed to go to, which I think is complete crap. The odds of becoming an astronaut is 1 in 12 million. The odds of becoming a professional athlete is 1 in 25,000. And we wonder why kids don't give a damn about space, technology, engineering, and math when they know that the odds of them becoming a wealthy athlete are far greater than them ever becoming picked to go on a shuttle mission to anywhere.
Well, just to give you a kind of a case in point, the New Jersey Nets have just lost 18 games in a row, so those guys that won that lottery are now part of that Wikipedia page that says they've lost the most consecutive games to start an NBA season. So 117-01 for you guys keeping score out there.
And they still get paid.
That's the thing. See, that what I'm getting at with your work, and this is something that maybe comes out in the wash a little bit, as things become more apparent to people, is that it isn't so much about, you know, what we do when we get to space. It's, we're at the if stage. If we go to space, like I think, like I said, people are much more interested in how things are going to affect their land and you know, their own property right now because of the economy and things like that. When you start talking space, it's so abstract, it's so remote, it's so, you know, otherworldly. It is science fiction to them, and that's why they'll go see disaster movie after disaster movie, and they always have that scene in the first third of the movie where the scientists panic, and they go, oh, the meteor's heading toward us, you know. It's like, and it's almost like the scientists are becoming, you know, sort of the, they're sort of the clowns. It's like they're set up to fail in terms of the way the culture perceives them because, you know, we're so puny and we have no control over this and we can't influence ourselves. When every time we've gone to space, especially in the last 10 years, the stuff they've got done, Hubble, things like that, is remarkable given the fact that you're going through this bottleneck of both budget and support, you know, from both politically and from the public. So how do you get people passionate about something that seems so remote and abstract? Because I'm over here talking semantics, and that's hard enough. I'm just trying to get them to breathe and move their eyes and become coherent. And you're talking about, you know, what we're going to do when we open a strip mall on the moon. How do you get people to get passionate about something that seems basically so, you know, remote as what you said about being an astronaut?
I think it starts with steps. The first thing you have to do is make people aware of how important space is to them directly, that it affects their electric bill, that it affects their wallet, you know, that the innovations developed through the space industry really matter to them every single day. And then correlate that to, and one of the best ways to do it is to look at energy. Everybody's very concerned about clean energy and also being green. Space can make us green. I'm not against the green movement as a nice thing to do to help the planet and not pollute it. I am against the politicalization of the green movement to take away liberties and freedoms and assume more control over people's everyday life under the umbrella of saving the planet. That's the problem I have. But I'm okay with being a planet saver. But how you choose to do it is what's tremendously important. And space exploration and development gives us the avenue to develop the kinds of technologies necessary to make a greener planet, to do things off the planet that we currently do here that are detrimental. So that's another way to hit them with positive space reinforcement. The next thing is to look at the amount of jobs that could be created. And I always cite this as an example. The Apollo program employed over 400,000 people and cost, in 2008 dollars, about $150 billion to do over 13 years. So $150 billion and over 400,000 people to send some people to a moon, plant a flag, drive a go-kart, hit a golf ball, and bring home some rocks. That's all we did, really. All right?
Oh, wow.
Now,
okay.
What we should have done is continue that and build the base and do research on the moon and learn about, you know, plasma and everything else and high-energy physics while being on the moon, because you can get stuff directly from the sun that way and do all kinds of analysis and turn it into a hotel and do all the kinds of things that were dreamt of when we were going to the moon, but then Vietnam showed up and screwed everything up. And all the budget money started going towards the war, and that's, you know, kind of what derailed a lot of that. And then they went to basically trying to develop a truck and a taxi in one system called the space shuttle, which, again, is another dumbest idea in the world. You don't drive a semi-truck to go pick up the groceries at Walmart, and you don't try to fit 500 tons of cargo from Walmart into your SUV. It just doesn't work that way. So you need to have two systems for two purposes. And they're almost trying to do the same thing now with the Constellation program and developing a system that does LEO operations and goes to the moon at the same time. There's no need to do that. Commercial sector can do LEO operations and facilitate the ISS and everything else. So, but back to my analogy, if we look at that stimulus package, that, oh, wonderful stimulus package, and most of which hasn't even been spent yet, about $500 billion has not been spent, you could buy several, let's see, 153, you could buy at least two, maybe three, full-scale Apollo programs with the leftover money from the stimulus package. If you did the multiplication, you're employing, what, 1.2 million people? And these aren't just scientists and engineers, because people think, well, those jobs aren't for me. Wrong. Those jobs are also administrative jobs, security jobs for the facilities, business jobs to do the contracts and do the work back and forth between the private sector and the universities who'll be doing research and everybody else. Students will be involved. Professors will be involved. Lots of R&D is going to have to be done if you're going to try and build a base on the moon. These are 1.6 million people making an average of $80,000 a year, because that's about what the average is around the nation, for a space industry person. Somebody making that kind of money is going to want now a house. There goes a boon to the housing sector. A new car, there goes that, some clothes, they can now go to the movies, they have disposable income, they can do investments. You start looking at it that way, now those 1.6 million people, each one of those people probably employs, by virtue of their own personal spending, another one to two people. So that'll take 1.2 million and multiply it by two or three. And that's how many jobs you're going to create in a very short amount of time, just by getting up in front of a microphone and saying, that's it. We're going to go build a moon base. We're going to work with our other nation partners to do it. We're going to use commercial industry to do it. And we're going to spend 500 and some odd billion or $600 billion, and we're going to build a moon base. And that's the project we're going to do. And that's going to take 25 years to accomplish, which means some people, that'll be their entire career path, will be facilitated by this major project. In the same way that Kennedy said, we're going to go to the moon in 10, there's no reason why a president can't stand up and say, we're going to build all on the moon in 25.
And not as a jingoistic, you know, Cold War, we're going to beat you to the moon, ha-ha, we found the flag, hit the golf ball thing, but as a basically an upgrade for the next generation that says, we're going to establish this toehold on the moon as a means to propagating the species, not so much just because we're interested in some kind of, you know, like you said, this flag-waving contest.
We'll do it with other nations. It'll be cooperative effort. Instead of competition, it's collaboration. We're working with Russia. We're working with Italy. We're working with England. We're working with all of the spacefaring nations and even bringing some new ones on board, like India and even China, if they stop being douchebags. If we could get China to straighten up a bit and bring them on board and say, all of us are going to do this together, and in the process, we're going to create all of ourselves one hell of an economic boon. And, oh, by the way, develop a boatload of technology that's going to help people in the medical field. It's going to help people in building your house. It's going to help the clothes that you wear. We might invent new fabrics that will be easier to breathe or UV resistant or God knows what they're going to invent.
And this is, again, this is something that I used to think was prevalent across the board in the scientific community. Until, you know, ClimateGate kind of like Santa Claus me out of that there was a boundaryless, you know, sort of a country second, you know, science first sort of mindset among the scientific community where it didn't matter ideologically if you came from a communist country, if you came from a democratic nation, or whatever, that you were all interested in the truth. And it seems
science
to me,
and math is science and math, regardless of who comes up with it.
Yeah, but it seems to me that when it came to this climate research, that there was a bias and there was a political punch. They kind of spiked the punch, and it led to a lot of guys sacrificing their integrity. And now, if you could connect some dots for us here, you know, how does like something like Homeland Security impact the space program?
Well,
there's four apart dots, but see if you can connect those.
Well, I know, I mean, Homeland Security definitely needs to use the satellite technology that we have, the spy satellite technology and stuff that the space industry provides. The space industry also helped develop a lot of the robotics and things that are necessary for those predator drones. The
right.
space industry is responsible for the robots that disable IEDs so that people don't get blown up in the process. And if it blows up, so what? It takes out a robot. It doesn't take out a person.
Right.
So when it comes to those kinds of things, and I mean, that's more global war effort kind of stuff. But even it can even apply to Homeland Security, too. Because
well,
we still
just,
have
it's just things like airports. I mean, look at what happened a couple weeks ago when we lost, like, I think it was one part of the system that was dealing with the flight reports. There was, like, one computer crapped out, and it took out the entire country, you know, for 6 hours. We couldn't get flight plans put into the towers. Which is something that anytime you deal with travel and you deal with planes and you deal with this country, we all basically start, you know, getting really rabbit ears about it. So because of the fact that there was, I mean, and again, the space program suffered so many things in its own learning curve, you know, Columbia, things like that, where when it failed on a big scale and it really, it kind of left a bruise, left a black eye around NASA. So, and NASA's built up its reputation the last 5 or 10 years with Hubble and things like that. So Homeland Security, again, it's always about risk and about assessing, you know, risk-reward. And the reward you're talking about, and you've articulated it really well, it probably, and again, I can't, you know, speak for what audiences you're talking to. I'm just talking about people that I talk to. It probably would be an easier sell if the risk was taken out of it in terms of the sense that how do you, like, if something goes wrong on a commercial airline and things like that, you know, we've grown to accept it even though it's what it is, it's less risky than traveling in a car than all the other. But would you be able to get across to people that space travel would be safer than, say, plane travel?
I could say I am confident it can be equivalent. I think the difference is that we don't fly enough to draw that comparison yet. We only fly a shuttle a few times a year. Russia only launches Soyuz a few times a year. So it's not like we have thousands and thousands of space flights going on a regular basis to really compare the two. So if you have one crash in an airplane, it's one of thousands, and that's an acceptable risk. If we have one crash in the space industry, it's a big deal because we don't fly that much. I think the mental perception would change the moment we start having flight after flight after flight, after we have Virgin Galactic launching every week, after we have other private companies launching every week, people going up to space and doing stuff. And once it starts happening more frequently and people realize, wow, that's not actually as dangerous as I thought it was, it's just now they're launching like 50 times a year and nothing's happened. Well, and then you can start seeing the mental shift to occur, but we're not there yet, and I think it's just a strength in numbers issue. The more we launch, the safer it gets.
So do you see this as like it's 1950 again, and they're building the interstate highway, and everyone's trying to go out and buy a car and get out on the highway, and we're building that infrastructure by investing in a space program that is launching like that we're going up instead of across. It's almost like, you know, we're becoming more three-dimensional in the way we live, where it becomes something that, you know, that if it got into that type of shovel ready type of a funding, people would understand it from both an economic and an infrastructure perspective, that rather than repair these roads and bridges, which also needs to be done, this would, to me, like you're saying, it's a fraction of the money that they're throwing away on other stuff. It seems to me that there's such an upside to it, as you articulated, not just for what happens in space, but what we develop technologically for use on the ground. And it doesn't have to be just about the United States and just about its friends. It benefits all countries, which, again, this is why I'm saying this issue with ClimateGate and the Copenhagen summit, and the fact that they haven't really debunked these people yet, and they haven't really unplugged this agenda. And, you know, when you have things like Google Earth, you know, exposing all these grave sites all over the country where they're building these giant holes to put bodies in, in case there's martial law, just in case the Patriot Act. These things, and with bioterror and all these things coming up, as a scientist, do you see scientists being manipulated by the politicians and the economic stuff, or do you see them basically trying to hunker down and head for higher ground, and the quality people are leaving the mainstream scientific community to try to get outside of this and function basically independent of it commercially, like you said, and leaving government programs in favor of where they have a little more freedom to do what they need to do?
Well, I want to touch on two points that you spoke on right there. To answer your latter one here, I think that the environmentalist wackos whose sole purpose is not so much to protect the earth but to control others, figured out 30-odd years ago that using climate change is one hell of an effective weapon to try and push their agenda without looking like psychobastards, if I can just put it as bluntly as that. So what they've done is the political movement of the environmental movement, the political side of it, has usurped and grabbed onto scientists. Well, and I don't even understand, I don't even call them scientists. It's hard for me to say that, because they are obviously being funded and twisted. And I don't know if they really think what they're doing is legitimate or not. But irregardless of that fact, they are being manipulated to push this agenda. And I think real scientists who have said, whoa, 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 we can't make a blanket assumption like that on this short amount of data. We would need at least 200 years of data, a couple of generations worth, to draw the kind of conclusions that you guys are instantly coming up with. There are far too many things that we don't understand about the sun, about our magnetic field, about our place in the galaxy and the fact that our solar system goes up and down as it goes around, so we cross galactic center every now and then, and the radiation coming directly out from the equatorial plane of the galaxy is far more intense than anywhere else when we're above or below that plane, and that we cross that all the time. All these different factors, radiation bursts and everything else that come from even, you can say, one-off anomalies, can affect what's happening right now. So to instantly say 100 years of human industrialization is killing the planet is kind of a joke. And so I believe that the political arm of the environmental movement has grabbed onto this part of science and twisted it. And I love these hackers. Very often, very rarely do I say I love hackers.
Yeah, they're
but in this particular case, I love these hackers for getting in there and saying enough is enough. Not only are we going to expose you, we're going to blast you in the process and really show you what you're supposed to be. Now you see backpedaling like crazy. But I want to go back to something you said earlier as well. I don't want to miss this point. You said the Highway Act, like we did back in 56. Yeah. It's funny that you say that because that's exactly one of the points I make in my speeches is the Highway Act and also the Intercontinental Railroad, how the government stood up and said, we need an infrastructure. The first thing they did was the Intercontinental Railroad when they got with the Union and Central Pacific Railroads and said, we're going to sell you bonds. We're going to give you land. You're going to pay us back with interest, but we're going to give you one hell of an infrastructure to use, and we get to use it too for free. And the railroad company said, hell yeah, I'm in. And so what did they do? They built the Intercontinental Railroad system, and it was a huge economic boon for this nation. It helped us grow. It helped us solidify. And just imagine what life would have been like had we not done the railroad. And anybody who can put that into their brain, I say now, imagine what would have been like had we not done the highway system in a similar fashion. And the highway system was a little different in that the government just did it on their own. They didn't work with companies like they did back for the railroad. I think they should have. It wouldn't have cost as much. And we could have private companies doing a lot of the maintenance instead of having it some large federal program. So it would have been a better way to do it. But why not adopt the same philosophy that's already happened twice and both have been successful? I mean, we use the highways all the time. Truckers use the highways like crazy. It's cheap. It's effective. It does the job. It's a major infrastructure. Why not do the same thing for space? Why not help establish a space infrastructure, if nothing else, between here and the moon? Start there.
Yeah,
or at least here and the moon.
That would sell the American public on it just like it did, 50, 60 years ago, because it promotes commerce, like you said. It promotes commercial opportunity, and it also promotes the innovations that you speak of that came from, having more ways to connect, just like the Internet did in the last 20 years. If it wasn't for the Internet, we wouldn't know about ClimateGate. So it's like it takes down a lot of these walls, these invisible walls that have been put up between, countries in different divisions, different fields, and it almost, despite itself, it almost ensures change, even though we can't control what's going to come out of the other end of the sausage factory.
Right.
This is definitely something that I think people would grab onto, get the passion for. If they could relate it to something that's already worked, like you said, the railroads and the highways, because we've abandoned those things. That's why we let all these things fall apart, these bridges and tunnels and things, and we didn't continue to reinvest in those things. We just kept going and going. There's a science out there, maybe you heard of it, called dromology, which is basically on the mindset that consciousness always wants to go faster, and we became speed freaks. And we became married to the sensory experience of speed, whether it was planes or rockets, and now we're going inward, and we're using virtual reality and simulators. All the things that were training the astronauts, are now becoming part of video games and all these other dimensional and military devices. So I think as a culture, we're sort of like done with speed, and we're looking for accuracy now. We're looking for to actually be able to get from A to B and not get lost in between because we're moving so fast. And you could see the way the movies have changed, too, in terms of the way that they perceive the scientists And usually their role in a lot of these things culturally is to be the naysayer, is to be the no, it can't be done guys. And you are coming from the other side of the coin and saying that you're not giving us a chance, put us in, coach. We actually have some relevant information here. So, you know, I wish you luck with the book because to me it sounds like it's a message that has not reached enough ears yet because we're still in the mindset of this environmentalism as a religious movement, as a political ideology, and not as hard science, not as something that people can look at objectively because it's coming through so many filters like this Copenhagen summit. So I guess in closing, how do you see this thing playing out in the next year or so to midterm elections? Do you see this becoming, you know, the agenda, like Agenda 21, you know, the UN put out 35 years ago or so, that basically is about ripping down a lot of the international divisions and attacking things like sovereignty and things like that, where individuals are basically sort of chattel and basically are what the agenda is global governing, not dealing with global warming, but governing us through this propaganda. Do you see that playing out in the short term?
No, I don't. And the reason why I don't think this will ever. I think ClimateGate proves that things like that won't ever really happen because with the internet, with Twitter, with social media, with networking, with the ability to communicate to a global audience in seconds, I find it very hard to believe that any organization is going to be able to be covert enough to pull off something like that without somebody blowing the whistle on it. Just like the ClimateGate. I don't think that we will. First of all, I don't want this one world government nonsense. I think that's talk about losing your checks and balances on a global level. That's just bad all over it. Every nation can work together, but still maintain its own history, its own heritage, and its own identity. There's nothing wrong with that. The question is, how do they behave now? Relative to everybody else, are we all playing nice, or do we have boneheads like Iran and stuff like North Korea that are trying to stir the pot? Do I ever think we'll get to some one world government to try and control that? God, I hope not. And I think once we expand into space, that will make that option even more impossible. Because how are you going to one world government on multiple worlds? You're not.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of the logic is so, it's almost like it's freeing in a sense because a lot of the obstacles that we normally encounter down here on the ground go away when you're dealing with a spatial expansion rather than a terrestrial one down here on the ground. So, like I said, I wish you luck getting this message out because it is so obtuse on the surface, but it's very practical once you get behind the curtain and remove a lot of the ignorance and a lot of the apathy that seems to get in the way of getting that message across.
Right. Well, I wrote the book in a way to appeal to the average person. The problem with so many scientists and engineers like myself is they don't know how to speak like this to everybody else. They're really good at talking technical and being smart, but they're not really good at relaying what we do and how it affects everybody else. And so I'm one of those rare breeds that has written a book that speaks to you. It speaks to the machinist. It speaks to the welder. It speaks to the nurse. It speaks to the stay-at-home mom. Anybody can read this book. Anybody can get it. And anybody can get involved. The whole back part of my book is a whole chapter on organizations you can get involved with, or if nothing else, scream and yell at your politicians until their ears fall off that space matters, damn it, let's do something.
I like that. Space matters. There's your bumper sticker.
There you go, space
right
matters.
There. And you're in Texas, you got lots of space. I've been lost
That's
there
right.
a couple of times outside of Plano trying to find that damn airport, and it was all I could do to find a toll booth.
Nice.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight on the show. Again, the book is available there on Amazon called Turning Point.
Yes. If you look up my name, Douglas Mallett, Mallette, it pops right up.
Okay. Well, again, good stocking stuffer for Christmas and get people thinking about space. Space matters. I like that. We'll rubber stamp that. We'll get the hats and maybe we'll put Soma Space Matters on top of that and get some product out there for you.
There you go. Marketing.
Yeah, well, it's all about that. It's all about getting the message out. The message gets shot once in a while because, believe me, sometimes I know what that feels like. All right, well, thanks for joining us tonight. You give us a lot to digest, and hopefully people will listen back to the program, get a hold of you, and get your book, and get this thing, you know, some momentum. Wish you luck with it, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
Take care, now. All right. Wow. There you go. Well, we were not joined at 10 o'clock, as I had hoped, by our friend NSM Doc. So we're going to leave that for another time. Maybe we'll get a hold of him on Friday and get his take, because he has a much dimmer view of what's going to come out of the other end of the sausage factory after this Copenhagen summit, which is next week. So we're going to shelve all that. We've done a lot of climate gate stuff. I know your heads are hurting. You're holding your minds. Oh, my God, can this guy get to some somatics? And I'm going to do it right now on my website, which is not just about space itself, but SomaSpace. There's an old 2007 document there called the S List. And if you go to the homepage, right now I'm transmogrifying on the website constantly. But right now, if you go to the website, somaspace.org, you click on Meet the Four Domains, you end up on a page that talks to what's called the S-List Primer. At the bottom of the page, there's a link to the entire S-List ebook. And I'm going to give you something called ontospotting now. I'm going to read you a list of names. All right, now, you archivists can sit, let's do it again, or you can go right to the website, print it out for yourself. These are part of my S-List in the book as examples of people who have this particular type of primary domain. Their brains are wired in a certain way, all common among this list. All right? So, here's the list. John Stewart, Mike Ditka, Alec Baldwin, Regis Philbin, Howard Stern, Roger Clemens, Kobe Bryant, Peyton Manning, Dr. Phil, Simon Cowell, Jerry Seinfeld, Bill O'Reilly, Julia Roberts, Hillary Clinton, Beyonce Knowles, Paris Hilton, Madonna, Oprah, Eva Longoria, Arianna Huffington, darling, Sharon Doherty, Sarah Jessica Parker, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, and Wilma Flintstone. So there's your list for the week. Now, if you go to the website in the next couple of days, hopefully by this weekend, I will have a practical way to apply such lists so that you can start to understand how to spot the Onto out in the wild. Being full moon tonight, it is the peak of the Onto part of the lunar cycle, which means your belief system is purging itself of all its incoherence. That's why people get agitated around the full moon. A lot of noise coming up from your body, holding on to a lot of old beliefs. We just had 45 minutes of a guy, you know, talking about a radically new way to look at life on Earth and life beyond Earth that you might want to think about wearing like a hat the next couple of days, because we're shifting to eco-spotting, and we'll be doing that next week from the wilds of San Diego as we crisscross the country in one of those funny plane things that fly, you know, across the country rather than up to the moon, and we're going to visit our friends at awarecom.com and talk in emod. And so we'll be seashore. You're gonna get me on a boat and a plane in 1 week and out of this chair. So it's going to be kind of a scary time for me, but I'll be reporting from San Diego next week as we take a look at a new technology that maybe will allow us as a species to actually learn from our mistakes rather than make more exotic ones and share those and sort of clean up our heads a little bit. All right, so we'll be out west next week with that. And I'm going to give you a little more of our friend NSM Doc now for a minute or two before we close up shop for the night, because I just want to get this Copenhagen summit's kind of important, so I want to see if he has anything to say here that might help us out. Oh, look at me. Look at me over there. There you go.
It will subject you to a world governing body. It is in the treaty written in there. It's the first treaty ever that says world government written in it, and details how to set it up. It takes your sovereignty, and once it is agreed to, you cannot undo it.
What's going on in this country is that the people are going to uprise against these people. And, you know, I could see when the guillotine is coming down on good old Lloyd's head, there goes God's work in the basket. You know, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be off with their heads. And these people, when you talk about a sociopath, it's no different than what was going on during the French Revolution. We just have the kings and queens and noblemen of commerce. That's the only difference. It's the same group of characters. You know what? These people think they're privileged. They think they're better than everybody. And why shouldn't they? They are privileged. They get the grease. We get the dirt.
There you go.
That's what it's going to be. That's what I sent in my email when I went and signed the petition against this.
So hopefully more of that on Friday if I get a hold of this guy. He's hard to get. I tell you, he's hard to get a hold of than the Pope. NSM Doc, if you're out there, peep, find me. And well, we've got to talk this over. All right, we got a nice calm message from Douglas, and I want to get the other side of the story from you, because once this summit goes down next week, again, most people are going to be tuning into the Christmas shopping. They're not going to pay attention. Oh, Obama got an award. And we're going to go right back about our business. But this is just like the Patriot Act. It just, you know, remember they pushed that thing through really quick? It's the same sort of mentality. They're going to just pass this thing, rubber stamp it, and then we live on the other side of that truth. And as we were talking about for, you know, most of the show, it ain't about your protection. It ain't about your well-being. It's much more about what these guys are trying to push through on Agenda 21. Google that, please. All right, so we're going to get out there next week to San Diego. We're trying to get a better topic for you for December. Hopefully we'll have more to report about this this treaty as news becomes available. But for now, we're going to try and wind you down here a little bit and give you something nice to take home. If I could find a song that I would think would be appropriate here. Let's see. Guns N' Roses. I don't know. Let's see. Actually, I'm going to go back to John Cougar here. Let's see. Mellencamp, where is he? John, well, be on Mellencamp. There he is. And we're going to go to JM's question. There you go. Because I think that we're sort of there, you know. All right, so thanks for joining us tonight here on Summertime. Again, our guest, Douglas Malott. His book, Turning Point, is available on Amazon.com. From the album Big Daddy, and I'm one of them, JM's question. I'll play out with that, and we'll see you again next week. From the West Coast, this is Dr. Mark saying, travel light to the darkness. Be well, my Sapiens.
Virginia's in the bathhouse, and don't drink the water, and I'm already swimming through. Woman in straw hat said the meat ain't worth eating, and someday in here maybe ain't so cool.
There you go. Travel on, my Sapiens. Go Giants.